Toronto! I wonder if they can hear it on Long Island.
Great move. What a goal. Beauty. Austin Matthews.
Bless you, boys. What a game.
Welcome to episode 61 of the Maple Leaf Hot Stove podcast. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Anthony Petrielli. We are recording shortly after the NHL trade deadline. There's been a bit of a delay since we last recorded because we wanted to come to you with our thoughts after this monumental occasion. In theory, in practice, a pretty quiet day for your Toronto Maple Leafs. So, Anthony, I mean, we'll count all of the deals. I say all of the deals as if they're all like tons of important deals. But, you know, there are four small trades, three of them that matter to some degree. The whole package, what's your first thought about Brad Treliving's first whirl at handling the Maple Leafs at the deadline?
Tame, right? But at the same time, it was kind of what we thought. We were on this podcast last week and we were asked to guess what would happen. And what did we didn't guess the correct players per se, but we essentially said a depth defenseman and a depth forward. And they ended up adding two, you know, I feel like depth isn't necessarily the right word, but lower end, we'll call it, defenseman and a legitimate depth forward. So it was kind of what we expected. I'm a little bit, you never know what to expect, but I'm a little bit surprised at some of the reactions I think that we're seeing off the hop.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because Treliving kind of said in pretty clear terms, like, I don't really want to build a team at the deadline mid-go. We'll see where we're at that time. But because the Maple Leafs has had this really strong stretch of play, people sort of assumed that that would have changed his mind. And, you know, it's fair when the situation changes, your approach to how you handle it should change as well. But just because people who are watching the Maple Leafs night in, night out thought, oh, this team has turned a little bit of a corner, it's a little bit of a different group, maybe it deserves a different approach, that doesn't necessarily mean that Treliving's thoughts about the teams had changed in a profound way. And these moves suggest to us that Treliving and the brain trust there did not feel like this was a team worth hauling out the asset cupboard further for pushing all in for. And as much as there's some frustration, as you said, off the hop, the reactions are not positive for this deadline. I do understand that as an overriding logic. Like, this team is kind of in that second tier of contenders. We'll get a little bit into their performances against Boston later on. But you just don't feel very confident about them against Boston, against Florida. And so I understand going about this in a tame way because I'm not sure you would have been able to overhaul things sufficiently to feel like, oh, okay, now we're right with that, with Florida, for instance.
Okay, so we're actually going to get into the Boston games right now because this is ultimately what it's really going to boil down to when we discuss anything. It legitimately does not matter what they do if their top guys are not going to play good hockey. Period. End of story. That has always been the case. It will always be the case as long as these guys are here. Last year, they added Ryan O'Reilly, who is a really good playoff player and is a really good player. And he's a big reason why Nashville is exceeding expectations this year and looks pretty comfortably driving toward a playoff spot. Even though a lot of people said that he was washed up and crappy when he was here last year, that's clearly not true. But where did he find himself? The fifth, sixth most important forward here? He wasn't the driving force. At the end of the day, it didn't, like, you could have added Tyler Toffoli. You could have added Thomas Hertl. I know these guys could have helped. But if you get into a playoff series like the Leafs did in round two, Matthews doesn't score a goal. Marner had one. It does not matter. You talk about, so then that circles us back to these Boston games. They did nothing all week. Now, there might be a flu going through the team. I do think the Thursday loss was pretty much the definition of a schedule loss through an 82-game season. It's a back-to-back. They had to travel. They played a rested team. Now you add in a flu bug. Then Matthew Nyes goes down early in the game and you're down to 11 forwards. Like, pretty unfavorable conditions when it comes to winning. They gifted them a 5-on-3. Nylander gifted them another goal. like a lot of bad things going on there. But bottom line, they played two games, and Pasternak was significantly better than all of Matthews, Marner, and Nylander combined. Now, if you're telling me that just add Tyler Toffoli, like trade the first for him, which is what I don't even know if a first would have got it done. They traded a second and a third, so I don't know if a first is essentially going to be called equal to a second and third in that scenario, but let's run with it and say it is. Like, do you think it matters? Like, if they play Boston in the first round and Pasternak is head and shoulders better than the three guys the Leafs pay a lot of money and entrust their basically the keys to the franchise to play like that, like, do you think it matters?
Well, this is the interesting thing, and it goes back before Treliving came aboard. There keeps being this idea of we need to make the Maple Leafs a difficult team to play against. Like whether it's calling them soft, whether it's saying they don't rise to the moment, like however you want to characterize that, it's like there's something wrong with whether it's the culture of the team or the way they play. We need to change things up. And so then you get additions like Lyubushkin, additions like Edmondson. And the reality is that you could fill the whole team with goons. I mean, I'm not saying that those guys are goons, but like you can fill a whole team with physical players, snarly players, whatever word Treliving wants to use. Like the character of the team is in the core of the team, in those guys that they're playing, well over 20 minutes of the night. The guys, as you say, who are going to determine whether they win or lose these series. Now, I don't think they necessarily have to be fatalistic about the fact that they lost two games against the Bruins and they got swept in the season series, and therefore there's like literally no chance they could win a playoff series against them. I don't think that even it feels like that right now. I know a lot of people feel that because they were so uninspired in those games, and Boston kind of gave them what they wanted and controlled it really well. I get that feeling like this is a hill they can't climb. I think that they potentially can, but as you say, like these players, and it's boring to be like, it's the same story with the Maple Leafs, but like these players and the success they're able to attain is really the key. And I do want to talk about all these trades individually. And I think that each of these players have something to offer, and you can't just like throw away the bottom six and this and the bottom two defensive pairs and say, oh, that doesn't matter at all. Like, because these guys, it's you can be too reductionist about it. But I do think it's interesting that there just keeps being these efforts to like make the Maple Leafs harder to play against. And I'm like, it would be harder for to play against the Maple Leafs if a John Tavares line could be counted on to drive play. Like, it would be harder to play against the Maple Leafs if, Mitch Marner was
I
the
do
same
think a
level
John
guy in the
Tavares
playoffs.
line can be counted on to drive play though. Like that
Against,
Tavares, Bertuzzi, Nylander line was legitimately good.
yeah, but in the playoffs and in prior years, that hasn't necessarily
Yeah.
been the
Oh, for
case.
sure. Sorry. I thought you meant like this year going into the playoffs. Like I think that's part of it. It's like you've tried the Domi thing. It's brought Domi into the fight a little bit more. It's definitely added a spring to his step, but you can't watch them get absolutely turnstile defensively night in, night out. It's like when the puck is in the offensive zone, the puck's on their stick, you feel good about it. The second the other team has the puck, you basically clench up and you pray that the shift ends without a goal against. Like that, like there's no other way to explain it really. That's just the reality. Let's just be honest about it. We're all seeing the same thing. The puck goes in their zone, and him and Nylander are just liabilities. I think they are like the, it's to the point now where like Guy Boucher is like tapping, patting Nylander on the shoulder for like what, like winning a battle to get the puck out. Like, is that where we're at 20? You're 28 years old. You've won zero things in the league. Like we have to like you get a pat on the shoulder for the bare, like to me, that's the bare minimum. Like you won a battle and you got the puck out. Like, congratulations. What are
I
we
think
talking
that was
about
on
here, man? What
a
are we talking
penalty
about?
kill. He's a relatively new penalty killer. I'm not going to go to war over a pat on the shoulder. But, like, no, I get what you mean. Like that. And I think on this podcast, we have been fairly in favor of, like, let's spread it out and see what
Yeah.
happens. But we have also, we've seen what's happened a little bit. And the idea, I think,
But
that
like
we've kind
that's
of
not the real
been.
way to spread it out. Like the real
No,
way
it's
to spread it
not.
out
Like,
is splitting out Matthews and Marner and like, having some
yeah.
sacrifice and being about the team, but it's never about that.
Well, again, we're getting real macro here. This is a trade deadline show. So I want to circle back and let's just go through the deals one by one, and then we can get a little bit bigger picture about where this all leaves us. So in chronological order and with respect to Cade Weber, maybe we can just skip that entirely. Sixth round pick for a guy like organizational depth type deal. I don't know if you have a strong thought on that, but in my view, the kind of chronological order is you got to start with Lyubushkin, who we did talk about in our preview show as a possible guy to go to, just because beyond Tanev, he had that very definitive fit due to the familiarity, due to the proof of concept alongside Riley, the fact that he's, physical right shot, no offensive ambition, theoretically could help your penalty kill, although I'm not sure anyone is convinced that he's, a needle mover in that regard. It looks the way it's supposed to look, I think, in my opinion, so far. Like, if you look at the numbers with him and Riley this year, obviously in these couple of games, it's 40 minutes. They're out shooting opponents 27-10, like 70% of the expected goals. But even as you just watch, like, yeah, there are some moments where the puck comes off of his stick and you're like, what was the idea there? But at the same time, of all the deals we're going to talk about, I understand. I think the complaint with Lyubushkin is, price point, but you got it double retention, so that's a part of it. And also the idea that because they did this, they didn't do something else more ambitious. But when I look at this deal, I don't really have too much of a problem with it.
Yeah, so we talked about him last week, and I was fairly dismissive of it. But the one thing that I did say is I wouldn't mind having him in a series against Florida and Boston. And that's what's ultimately going to end up happening. So, and that at that point, Chris Tanev had also not been traded. We didn't trend in this direction where Alex Carrier ultimately did not get traded. You know, the reality, like, I would prefer Lyubushkin and what he brings, even at a more expensive cost than ultimately Matt Dumba. I just did not like Matt Dumba at all.
Especially
So,
for what the Leafs needed too, I think.
yeah. And so it starts to trend in the direction of making a lot more sense when you kind of put the pieces. It's not like there weren't really good right-handed defensemen that went other than Chris Tanev. And, you know, it was basically when the Leafs acquired Lyubushkin, I went, wow, like you couldn't have just paid up for Tanev. But, you know, I heard Nick Kiprios on the radio say the Leafs did offer the first, like the first was on the table for Tanev. I have had a few people say it to me that I would only put this out there because I think that they're fairly reasonable and people I would trust say that the first was on the table. So, all that to say is, like, if you were offering the first and Calgary was turning it down, like, are you really going to put much more on the table for 34-year-old Chris Tanev pending UFA who did not sign an extension upon going to Dallas? Because I wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't, would you?
No, I,
So
and then
fit.
if anything, maybe the Leafs can potentially pursue him in free agency if they think it's a good fit, considering he hasn't signed an extension.
Yeah, I definitely can. And I definitely think there would be interest there. He's from Toronto. I think people that are in Toronto can barely feel confident about that part. And you know, towards the end of his career and how that all might play out, but we'll see on that one. I have no idea. All that to say is, like, beyond that, like, I love Tanev. I made no bones about it. I think I was talking about him here in November as a good fit. He was like the player that kind of would have like linchpin things for me in terms of like playing alongside Riley, being the top like pairing guy that could capably go against top guys. But failing that, like, I understand why they would trend in the direction of Lyubushkin, especially once it seemed pretty clear that Alex Carrier was not getting moved, right? Which again didn't happen. I didn't think much of Sean Walker, and they traded a first. I know they also dumped a bad contract on them as part of that, so that weighs into the price. But you know, if you look at it, the first, the bad contract, you couldn't imagine Walker going for less than a second, and the Leafs don't even have one for 3 years. So when you kind of start to piece all those things together, Lyubushkin's somewhat known quantity. Again, he was solid last time he was here in the regular season. The playoffs was a bit of a tougher story. You mentioned some of the stuff about puck movement, which is still very much apparent. and he should basically defer to Morgan Riley at all times. Like sometimes they go D to D and he looks to go up, which I know is the play and like how things are set, but like really, like he should just pass it back to Riley, and or someone should just pull Riley aside and be like, stop passing the puck to the other side of the ice.
The optimal play from him is probably inferior to the suboptimal play from Riley, to be honest.
Yeah. But like,
but that's
all
fine.
That,
that's
all
okay.
That to say is I've liked him so far. Like it's not like he's hopping the bench. And I'm like, ah, shit. Like, whereas they had a few guys before hopping the bench where I was going, okay, like, let's hope this shift is over. And you kind of tug at your collar a little bit and you call it a day. So by and large, he fits. He knows the group. I think there's something to adding guys who are familiar with the environment already. Said it when they acquired him. You know, Jake McCabe struggled to me the rest of the way. I think Lyubushkin has kind of essentially just fit right in. And like, you know, it's like he never left.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's more so a good fit for the 2023-2024 Toronto Maple Leafs than he is a good player in a vacuum. But that's, you know, you're building within the context of your own team. And there are certain players maybe they could have targeted that have a more comprehensive skill set than Lyubushkin. He's a pretty narrow guy. Like, what he does is pretty limited. But inside the box he lives in, he's not bad. And, like, do the Maple Leafs want to live in a world where they have a better guy to complement Riley with? For sure. And, you know, Tanev, as he said, he would have fit hand in glove with this team. Like, he's a higher caliber of player. But there weren't a lot of people living in between those two for the Maple Leafs to look at. And from a price perspective, third and a sixth, you know, a third is, that's a little bit for a rental of a guy who some people would say is more of a third pair guy on talent alone. But, I, you know, if it had been a fourth, no one would have batted an eye. And with the double retention, it gave them the ability to keep shopping. Now, what they kept shopping for, again, that's a little bit more up for debate whether you like it or not. I think the move that I liked the least was the move for Edmondson. And, you know, that's a third and a fifth for another rental. Huge man, defensive defenseman, very experienced, Stanley Cup in St. Louis, deep run with the Montreal Canadiens as well. He's the type of guy that makes me a little bit nervous because whenever you're going and getting guys who a lot of the resume are team playoff success, there's always danger in overpaying for the individual player and over rating the degree to which they contribute to that. But in his prime, Edmondson has been a pretty good player, but he's a bit of an old 30. And, you know, he's someone who's playing less than 17 minutes a night, I believe, with the Washington Capitals this year. Maybe not the player that folks might remember based on name recognition. And Leafs fans probably remember best from his time with the Montreal Canadiens.
Okay, so it's interesting because I actually almost have the opposite take, but pending one big thing. So Lyubushkin to me gave me more pause early because we know what he is, right? Like he's more of maxed out as at best a five. Like, you know, he's truly a third pairing guy because he's just so limited with the puck, but he can do certain things and you can leverage him in certain moments depending on the game state situation kind of thing.
And use someone else when the situation calls for it as well. Like he's paired with Riley, but he doesn't have to play all of Riley's 5-on-5 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, there is a premium on right-handed defensemen. That's just the reality of the situation across the league. I think last I looked, it was something like 30 to 35% of defensemen are right-handed. So, you know, that's just, it's just the math. It's just, you know, it's basic grade 9 economics, supply and demand. That's how things work. But, you know, to your point, it's like Liljegren takes offensive zone faceoffs with Riley for a reason. They move things around. But, you know, that again, that's really what Lyubushkin is. Like he's a third pairing, solid, reasonable defenseman, can add a few things to your team. Like Joel Edmondson at his best was a legitimate top four defenseman. Like actually, like he was actually good. So where he gets interesting for me is he had these back issues and his game obviously completely fell apart. To the point where he's, you know, this retained guy traded to Washington Flyer. And then it looked like he finally started coming around healthy in the offseason. And then he fractures his hand in training camp. And so he doesn't start the season on time. And when you haven't really played a lot of hockey and then you're not getting in the flow of like proper training camp preseason, starting the season on time, which I do think is important because the first like the month of the season is terrible hockey. So it kind of allows you to just like get away with murder and like get your feet wet and like get going. And then, the hockey picks up as the season goes along, as we're seeing every year. It's the same story. And so, like, the later you have to insert yourself in, the more difficult it is, especially when you're older, especially when you haven't played a lot of hockey the past few years. I think it was like something like 85 games or somewhere around there prior to this season. And then, you're on a bad team. Like, that's just the reality. You're on a bad team. Of course, they're going to want to play Rasmus Sandin more than Joel Edmondson, just on principle alone. Like, they know where they're at. They are roughly very close to a playoff spot right now, and they still sold. Like, they know, like, they're a bad team. I think their goal differential is like minus 30. So, all that to say is, if Edmondson is healthy, like, he's a legitimate contributor to me. Like, he understands how to play in the playoffs. I know what you're talking about in terms of like separating team result from how responsible the player was for that result. But I also don't think it's nothing when you're a regular and you've gone to a cup twice. Once more as a third pair guy, admittedly, but once also as a top pair guy. Like, that's not nothing. So adding someone who actually understands those grinds and those battles and to me, it's contingent on how healthy is he. Because if he is, I think you're actually getting a legitimate contributor.
The thing that's interesting with Edmondson is that, Lyubushkin is all about fit. It's about him being right-handed. It's about him having the familiarity. It's about how he slides right into the lineup comfortably. Edmondson doesn't necessarily slide into lineup completely comfortably. It was interesting following kind of the discourse after he was traded to the Leafs because there are people saying, oh, okay, well, Simon Benoit has been an amazing story. And, it's something we've even discussed kind of months ago. He might be that guy who gave you a surprising number of games and then you give him a handshake and have him walk off and he's the seventh defenseman in the playoffs. Or there were other people who were saying, oh, this is the end of Timothy Liljegren. There's probably a little bit too much drama on that. Some people expecting that maybe he would get traded at some point during this trade deadline. Where did you end up falling on the how Edmondson fits in a literal sense, sort of beyond what we're going to get from him from a talent perspective? Because I think both you and I would agree a lot of that is based on health, and it is just kind of hard to project what version of him is going to show up. And, also, this is another part I'm sure we're going to get into as well. Like, it is pretty hard to have a great sense of what a defensive defenseman offers unless you are watching them consistently because we're going to talk about the player cards that are flying around. It's just
Don't get me
I'm
started on
very
player
I'm
cards.
a
We don't have enough
very
time.
okay well let me I'll give you a mini 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 spiel. I'm a
Okay.
very statistically oriented person in many facets of life, including sports. Like, I really like to pore over the numbers. That's a big part of what got me interested in this business. In the first place, I like information. I like to know the most I can possibly know. But as far as hockey goes, like, I am just not convinced we have the tools available to us in public. There's probably some proprietary ones behind closed doors, but I don't think the publicly available tools really capture this type of player very well. Some of the defensive defensemen who will have really nasty player cards are duds. Some of them are bad. We see Simon Benoit is the anecdote people like to bring up, but the reality is, like, defensive defensemen on teams that are going to get shelled no matter what are going to be on the ice for their team getting shelled. Their stats are going to look really ugly. Edmondson is one of those guys, but I can't claim that I've been, watching everything Washington Capitals this year. That is a team that I would avoid watching. Just in general, that's a team I would avoid watching. Like, old, stale, over the hill. Not a great team, not a
Yeah,
team I tune in for. So, like, I can't tell you where is Edmondson today with an incredible degree of confidence. Like, some people will fake that level of confidence. I'm not going to fake it for you. Like, I can't say with an incredibly high degree of confidence what Edmondson is today. So I think what I'm interested in is what's his fit. And so that's what I want to know how you see that.
So I sadly did watch it. Quite a bit of Washington over the past few weeks because I thought the Leafs might take a swing on Nick Jensen. who we talked about a little bit last week as well. So I did kind of dial into them. There was actually one hilarious game where Edmonton crushed somebody, and I was like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? But that was pretty much the extent of my like Joel Edmonton highlights of, oh, like that would be an intriguing, or you watch something, you give it a thought for a few seconds, and then otherwise, like he is meat and potatoes, right? It's just like, to try not to make mistakes, don't be a liability. He's 6'5", which is massive. Like that, he's not like kind of big, like he's big. Like Labushkin is kind of big. He's 6'2", but 6'5" is massive.
He's the mutant. I forget who said the Leafs needed mutants. I think that was
And
Bizzanetti. He's a mutant. There you go.
like he's gonna offer something to that regard. And like I know I mentioned the cup experience, and Declan kind of flagged for me, who's one of the contributors here at Hot Stove. And he kind of flagged once they got him, like going through his interviews, which then I started doing it too. Like he's low key kind of a funny guy. And the reason I bring that up is because I do think it's a team that needs some levity. Like I think they need to relax sometimes. It's like even the game that just happened against Boston, like Mitch Marner scored an unreal goal. Like Swayman is amazing. Like he's one of the best goalies in the league. And Marner went down and he sniped him like hard. And if you watch it going around, like he goes around the net and like there was like it was like almost like he was upset. Like he didn't enjoy it. Like he definitely did not enjoy the goal that he scored. And I'm not saying he should go nuts. Like they were losing 2-1. But you can be happy and motivating. I'm sure you've seen the clip of Bill Belichick where he's going through like successful plays the Patriots made. Like sacks and whatever, and guys not celebrating. And he talks to them about celebrating their successes and building momentum and energy. And I thought about that a lot watching Marner score that goal because I was like, why? Like Geeky scored. He took like six steps to the boards, like slid on a knee, like shotgun like the air six times and then jumped into the glass to make it 3-1. But you're telling me like on the road you couldn't get fired up as a leader of the team and like show some like emotion to build on. So all that to say is going back to Joel Edmondson of I think he can provide some like levity to the group. And the defense that they had in place for the Boston game was pretty much to me a preview of the Leafs of just swapping out Benoit for Liljegren. Like again, like I think Benoit had shown some cracks in the armor of late, which I think are real. Like real to the point where you have to acknowledge him and just be honest about it. Like he's 25. He's never played in the playoffs before. I really like the guy. I think there's a lot of gamesmanship to him. I think it's fair to question like how good he would be night in, night out, every other night for the playoffs. Like that's a very hard thing to walk into. You even go to that Buffalo game, it's the end of the game and he doesn't get the puck out. And Buffalo almost scores with like 25 seconds or so left in regulation. Because Benoit made it he made a bad play up the wall. Like that's what it was. It was a bad play. Like you just cannot do that. And Buffalo sucks. Like that is a terrible hockey team. If you do that against Boston, you lose in regulation, right? It's like Nylander makes a bad play at the blue line. He turns it over. They go down and score. Like they were doing crap like that all night against Buffalo. They're just a terrible hockey team and they couldn't make them pay. So I look at him. I ultimately look at their D essentially as Labushkin is an upgrade over like Will Lagesson playing the right and, Mark Giordano in. And I look at Edmondson as a slight playoff upgrade, having been through the wars and knowing what to do and having a little bit more understanding of playoff hockey than Benoit. So are they massive, needle moving, inspiring moves? Absolutely not. That's very obvious. Do they raise the floor of the team to some degree? I would say yes.
Yeah, it's interesting with Edmondson. Like you are paying for that upgrade over Benoit, and it does feel like a decent amount to pay for that because obviously he's bigger, obviously he has more experience, but it's both a very similar type of defenseman, and so I think the reason that the deal makes me, I guess, uneasy is because The Maple Leafs already have this big deficit of draft capital, and they're hollowing out the middle of that further and kind of tacitly admitting that this probably isn't the year just by the way they've gone about this deadline. So if this maybe isn't the year anyway, I'm not sure if I want to pay that much for the difference. And, there's a possibility that Benoit is a part of the Maple Leafs' future, not in some kind of profound way, but as a guy that they could sign to a very low cost contract and have live on the third pair. And so I didn't necessarily mind the idea of going into the playoffs. I agree with you that he hasn't played as well of late, but I don't think it's necessarily like he's doomed to not bounce back. Like he's a young guy, he's healthy. He played the full season last year. It's not like he's hitting some kind of rookie wall or anything. So if the alternative is Edmondson, I probably would have just ridden with, I probably just wouldn't have done the deal. I probably would have just ridden it out with Benoit. Now that, and maybe that's going to sound very stupid in a few weeks, and Edmondson's going to be absolutely critical at some point in the playoffs. Anyone who can potentially kill penalties too, and we're going to talk about that with Connor Dewar because that's kind of the main attraction. That's something else worth considering because although Benoit has had some decent moments killing penalties, it's clear that the whole mix doesn't work. So however many new components you can add who can potentially help there, that's something worth considering as, it's something that'd be a big part of the Maple Leafs' fate. Like the amount that penalties get called in the playoffs, often people are like, oh, they don't call any penalties because it's just like a stereotype, but the numbers don't bear that out at all. Like they do call penalties and it does matter what your special teams are like in the playoffs 100%. Like people get away with murder too, just because like it's all murder. Like it's all carnage and they can only call so much
I
of it.
love it,
But
man. I
like,
love the playoffs. I was watching Detroit, Colorado this week, and there were some really big scrums and whatnot, and crowd was losing. I was just like, hockey's back, man. It's back. Like
oh, I thought for a second you were talking about Detroit, Colorado, like you're going back to the
No,
film, like
it
some old
wasn't
days. I'm like,
it
that's
no,
some good hockey
it
there, right
wasn't
there.
that level of aggression, but it was to a level where I was like, we're so back. Like the it's it like it you can see the physicality and whatnot. There were a few really lean years in this league of a lack of physicality, and to me it's definitely ramped up. It feels like it has anyway, in terms of like what we're seeing from a physical product. So I'm a fan of it. And I think the other thing too with Edmondson, which is worth at least consideration, is can he provide some stability to Timothy Liljegren? Because the stuff that we're saying about Benoit also applies to the fact that he'd be partnered with Timothy Liljegren, who to me has struggled. I mean, not to me, to the reality of the situation, he has struggled in the playoffs ever since he's been promoted. He's been continually healthy scratched. He's had a really bad week this week. I saw him attribute that to, losing some momentum with the injury and needing to get going. And Sheldon said something kind of similar where he was like, yeah, there's no time for that. Like, it's time to like start playing hockey. And fair enough. Like, I'm understanding of it. We talk about it all the time. Like, he seems to get the yips. I don't know what else to call it. Like, he gets so jittery with the puck. Like, he overthinks things. It's just like, he has all the tools. Like, he's a good skater. He has a bomb. He can move the puck. He has some skill. It feels like every week he has like at least one rush where he goes end to end, and you're like, how did that happen? He's strong guy. Like, he's built like a fire hydrant. Like, there's right-handed. There's so much to like about him, but he just does not put it together on a consistent basis. And you get these tight checking games, and it seems to bring out the worst in him as opposed to the best. So I don't know. But and then you're gonna pair Simon Benoit beside him, and you're gonna feel good about that in the playoffs. Like, I personally would not. I think like that
I would have
compounds
gone back
things.
to Brody Liljegren and McCabe Benoit, to be honest. Like that's what I liked. But I'm not saying that that's perfect either, but like that, I probably would have gone back to that, to be honest.
And that's part of it too, where I think it's pretty obvious why they want to pair Brody and McCabe as their shutdown pairing. They did it last year in the playoffs. They kind of held fort against Tampa. They struggled against Florida. Again, like we've been, everyone's been pretty clear on, we'll call it the McCabe learning curve. He's definitely been better this year. I'd like to see those guys get 3 weeks now and see how it kind of shakes out with them together and see if it can settle into something respectable. But, you know, if they could do that, and then you have the Riley Labushkin and Edmondson, hopefully with some savvy alongside Liljegren, and Liljegren at times moving up to play with Riley in offensive situations, so on and so forth. Like, it's not a great defense. Let's not go crazy here. But you could at least squint and see how it could cobble together. So, yeah, I mean, that's the best, like, glass half full take I guess I could probably get to on it.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, again, you don't want to be too reductionist. Like, for the Maple Leafs to succeed in the playoffs, they need to be one of the most explosive offenses in the playoffs, because they're not going to shut down high quality teams with the defense core they have and the goaltending uncertainty. Like, the chances of them going on a run where they're giving up one goal, two goal over like a long period of time, it's just very unlikely for this group, regardless of the additions they've made. The last of which, again, respect to Cade Weber, last of which was Connor Dewar. And, you know, this is a pretty low level ad. I think, you know, at some point people were considering, you know, he could be a third line center. I think it was, I heard on Trade Center today, that's a stretch. You know, this is a fourth line player who kills penalties. Like, he's a defensive forward. He's got 10 goals this year, but like on a very high shooting percentage. Yeah, he's what people wanted Noah Gregor to be, you know, skates around, can be disruptive, kills penalties. Difference being that he can take some face-offs. So if one of the centers gets injured, then in theory, he could be your fourth line center. Anything that keeps Noah Gregor out of games is a positive. So, and he's an RFA, not a pure rental. So if you like what he brings, you can bring him back for presumably no money over some period of time. So that makes him a little bit more interesting. Again, as we said, the PK really needs help, and he's someone who's been a part of successful penalty kills in Minnesota. Hard to be too excited about it, but I also have a hard time objecting to this deal, because you're talking about a fourth round pick for someone who might just make a multi-year impact in a very, very small role, admittedly.
And as we just found out, Dmitry Ovechnikov, you know, excuse my pronunciation of the name, is also included in the trade. So 10 points in 20 games with the Marlies this year. He's 21. He has 7 goals. It's worth noting. But getting to the Duard point, their penalty kill sucks. It's the worst penalty kill of any playoff team. Anytime a team gets a power play, you hold your breath for 2 minutes. You know, if a fourth round pick and Dmitry Ovechnikov help you trend it in the right direction to even a 2% degree, it's worth it. Like, that, like, it's not the big gain that people want to see, but like the logic of this trade entirely checks out to me. I was very confused, by the way. Like, I was watching TSN Trade Center as well. I don't want to get on a whole spiel of ripping it, but I was very confused by the takes they had on the panel. Their penalty kill is terrible. They are trying to take steps to smooth it out. Sheldon Keefe has been very clear all year that they are, his words, not mine, trying to manufacture penalty killers. Connor Dewar is a penalty killer. It is pretty simple stuff. Noah Gregor did not pan out. Fair enough. You took a flyer on a guy. He made zero money. It just didn't work. Okay. Right? You tried Matthew Knives on the penalty kill. No. You know, against Boston, Bobby McMahon was killing penalties. He's not an NHL penalty killer. He's just not. I like Bobby McMahon. I probably like Bobby McMahon more than most people do, for that matter.
Whoa, I carved out the I like Bobby McMahon position in this podcast. You're the Pontus Holmberg guy.
I love Pontus Holmberg too, don't get me wrong.
That must have boiled your blood, those healthy scratches, you know.
Like, I was praying to God that they were somehow showcasing Noah Gregor to someone who hasn't paid attention all year. and that they would get like a fifth round pick back or something for him just to move on with their lives. Because you know, the first one, fine, you give the guy a little slap on the wrist. Fine. You know what? You didn't like the way that he played on Monday. Give him a little slap on the wrist. That's okay. Sit him. The second one was insane. Like that was like stupid. That was straight
There's
up
no
bad.
argument to be made that he contributes
None.
less than Noah Gregor. There's just
None.
like you can, I, there's you can't even start that argument because Gregor, there's nothing that Gregor's
No.
doing.
And then I was like, oh, maybe he has the flu, something along those lines. And, you know, he's lost like 15 pounds this week and you can't play him. No, they're like, I was listening to Mark Masters today. He's like, healthy scratch, two straight games. I was like, healthy? Two? Noah Gregor? Okay. So that was stupid. But all that to say, Bobby McMahon, not a penalty killer. You know, watching Nylander, I like Nylander with penalty kill to some degree. I think he's gotten better at it. I like him on the penalty kill with about 30 seconds left after the Leafs have shot the puck down the ice. That's when I like Nylander. I like him causing some havoc in the neutral zone. I think he can make a team pay. I think he can transition you from penalty kill to 5-on-5 and do some real damage. I think if anyone is sloppy in the neutral zone, they're gonna have a real problem with him. But once it's in zone, it's a real problem for the Leafs. And the truth is he is not gonna lay out to block shots. And he is not gonna lay out to get in shooting. He's not. If there's a 50-50 puck, I feel pretty good about his odds of winning it. He's strong and he's fast. And he's an elite player. So elite players usually win like stick battles for pucks. That's the benefit of having him or a Matthews or even a Marner on the penalty kill. But in the flow of like a full-on penalty kill, you are in the zone. It is a D-zone face-off. Like, I want a guy who's just absolutely selling out his body. Because you need it like that, you know. I know shot blocking is like a bad word now to people, but you are going to need some guys to sacrifice. I don't want Nylander to be the guy that sacrifices, nor would he do it. I don't want Matthews to be that guy. Connor
He
Dewar,
does it a
you are that
surprising
guy.
amount, though.
Yeah, he does block shots. I don't mean that in that way. I mean more of like Matthews isn't falling to his knees to block a shot. He's really good at getting in shooting lanes and like, you know, off his shin pad. Which I'm not judging the style of shot block. I'm just saying there's a bit of a difference between a guy like laying out and a guy who's like good at getting in the way of the shot.
No, I think you're right. You don't want that to be Matthews. You don't want to be Nylander. Sometimes, weirdly, it's Tyler Bertuzzi. Not
Yeah,
like a
he's good
huge.
at
He's
it.
not a
He's good
huge
at
shot
it.
blocker, but when he does it, he's going all out for it.
I
No,
like that they use him at the end of games with Matthews and Marner. He is good at, he will lay out.
for sure. No, I think Dewar is he's a fine add. If you also just think of it from sort of a depth perspective, like. Not only is Noah Gregor not playing, like you have the option of taking Reeves out as well. I know Reeves has been a lot better recently, and they may well envision him playing for them consistently in the playoffs and what he brings. To be honest, I'd like to give him a lot of credit because I think he just compared to what he brought at the very beginning of the season, it's night and day. But I think it's also important to have the option to take Reeves out. Because there may be a time where, whether it's his age, the wear and tear, he just like slows down. Like there are the possibility that he becomes unplayable is a very real possibility. And if the next man up is Noah Gregor, I'm assuming Holmberg's found his way back into lineup at this point.
Dear God, he better have like.
If the next man up is Noah Gregor, that's not what you want. So now you have a situation where if everyone's healthy, which is not fair to presume in any way, shape, or form, but like there's a way to have neither Reeves nor Gregor in the lineup. And if that's the case, you can feel more comfortable in what your fourth line brings. Like we are talking about the very fringes of an NHL hockey team right now, but this stuff does matter to some extent. And again, it's interesting because a lot of I don't say there's a huge backlash to the Dewar deal or anything, but it kind of came in at the end of the deadline and people didn't hadn't had the like, oh, Leafs aren't doing anything all clear yet. So I think there was this kind of component of hope that it would be something more significant. And that's not Dewar's fault and it's not the Leafs' fault. And so being disappointed with that deal because it wasn't the deal you wanted it to be is different than thinking it's a stupid deal. And I don't think it's a stupid deal. I think it's a nice little deal for Trilliving.
Yeah, I like that he's 24. I like that he is an RFA. I like that he is someone that should be like cheap depth. They should be able to keep in. You're right about Noah Gregor can't be 13 forward. He just can't. Like he hasn't shown anything. And when he first got taken out of the lineup, I didn't really want to get into it at the time, but he had this like quote where they were talking to him about being healthy scratch, and he said, like, I think I've been consistent. And I was like, all right, like don't play this guy ever
You've
again.
been
Like,
consistently streaming in on the
yeah.
left side and taking a harmless shot on net, consistently doing that.
I don't want to like speak for the exact quote, but it was like, yeah, it was along the lines of like, I think I've done a pretty good job. Like, I think I've been consistent. And I was like, oh my God, this guy not only is not doing anything, but he lacks the awareness of not doing anything. Like, I don't have time for it personally. Other people, if they do, fine. I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise. I'm just telling you, the guy's done nothing for 3 months and you take him out of the lineup and he's kind of sitting there going, like, I think I've been pretty good. He probably shouldn't play anymore. I think that's the end of the conversation. So, anyways, that can end. That show can end. And yeah, all that, if you get a couple good years, the biggest thing for all of these guys, I think, is again, the penalty kill is terrible. If these guys can help trend the penalty kill to a right direction, that does actually, in a legitimate way, like that's not even a fringe thing. Like that's a real like success driving thing that then helps set the table further for what we started the whole conversation about. Like the top guys can feel free at any time to just be good at hockey come playoffs. You don't need to rocket science this. Like, just like, are you going to be good or are you not going to be good?
Yeah, and I think that the I don't know the big picture thing with the Leafs is that they don't have a lot of the characteristics that we associate with Stanley Cup winners, with deep drivers. Like they do not have the 100% top five in the league defenseman who's absolutely elite, and their defense corps does not hold up against some of the better teams in the league. They do not have like a super locked in goalie that you're convinced is going to be above average. Their middle six center situation, a little bit weird, a little bit dicey potentially with what Max Domi's defensive limitations are. Like there are holes in this team, there are flaws in this team, and I understand that people are disappointed that those flaws have not been completely addressed. I don't think it would have been possible to completely address them. But the flip side is that like the Leafs also have a guy who scores like every game. Like a lot of Stanley Cup winners didn't have a guy like that. You know what I mean? They have a guy on a second line who, in Willie Nylander, who's, he's trending to be like a top 10 point getter in the NHL. They've got this incredibly high level power play when it's clicking. Like the Leafs, what makes the Leafs good in theory, and it hasn't always shown up in the playoffs as we know, but like in theory, their strengths are really strong, even if some of these weaknesses persist. That's not me like gassing up and saying they're going to win the cup or anything. But I do think that it's worth remembering that just because some of the flaws that you can identify with this team have not been completely addressed, it does not mean that they are doomed because they don't have take the same shape of a Vegas, take the same shape of a Tampa Bay Lightning team that won a couple times. Like it is a bit of a different wonky beast. It's probably a lower percentage than some of the top tiers. Like I do kind of conceptualize the Leafs as a second tier contender, but I don't think the Leafs fans should come out of this deadline thinking like this was a complete shit deadline and this team is doomed and it's going to be the same old story. Probably above 50% chance it's the same old story. Like, playing Boston, playing Florida, I don't give them above 50% chance against either of those teams,
It would
but
have
it
been
isn't.
regardless of what they did at the deadline, though.
But I think a lot of people have this view that it's like a 5% chance that anything good will happen for Toronto. And it's like, I understand. I've lived in Toronto basically my whole life. I get that where that mindset comes from, but it is okay to take a step back and be like, yeah, they'll probably be underdogs, whatever they're doing, but there is a little bit of improvement here. And it is not, this absolutely terrible team that sometimes people like to believe it is.
Yeah, and what I think I will add to that on my end is I do wish they got Tanev. I will go back to that. Like, I think he would have fit perfectly. I get it if you want to verify the first round pick thing and go, from that point forward, I wouldn't be adding to a first round pick for Chris Tanev. So if Calgary wasn't going to accept that, and I don't know that to be 100% true, but all indications are pointing that way, then there's really not much to say at that point. Like you can't go much further than that. So, okay. Chychrun didn't move. Hannifin didn't want to stay in Canada. Those were the three guys for me on defense. I had no interest in Walker. I'd always made that clear. I had no interest in Dumba. I always made that clear. And he ultimately went for nothing because nobody had interest in him. Carrier never moved, who I always liked. Jensen never moved, who I was weary about the contract, but could somewhat get there because I do think he would help. I know people talk about Parayko all the time. One, he didn't move. Two, he is the definition of boom or bust to me. He like if you get him and it works, great. Like you're gonna love it. But if it goes poorly, that is the kind of contract that cripples what you're trying to do here for years to come, not just this year, but for years to come.
Yeah, he better age well or you're in real trouble.
He's
Like
31. He's
you're
not
paying a
27.
ton for his deep 30s on that contract.
Like that is the kind of contract where, to me, like if I'm year one, Brad Tree Living, am I, fan? I keep saying it. Fans have the history of the team. Brad has the history of starting in May. So if you're Brad Tree Living, are you sitting there going, I'm taking on years 31 to 37 of Parayko at 6.5 after watching these guys? I just don't think I could get there. Like, I couldn't get there. I understand why people liked him. There were times I was watching going, yeah, it would be nice to have him. I also probably watched the Blues play 10 games over the past 2 months, and I couldn't figure him out to save my life. I was like, is he just terrible or is this team terrible? Or like, what's the
I
situation
mean, the
here?
Blues overall just bizarre, but
And like, I feel like I've been reasonable on defense over the year of figuring out who's good and who's not. But like, man, like he's not doing anything for me. Like, I'm sorry. Like he's not physical. He's definitely not a big hitter. Like he's a massive man, but he's not a big hitter. He's not physical along the walls. He has a good reach. He has a bomb of a shot. I don't think he's nimble in front. Fans should have seen in front of his own net, I mean, in terms of like winning pucks and loose pucks in those areas. Fans saw Matthew Knies, who's basically not gone around anybody all year other than Graves on Pittsburgh, who's also not good, absolutely torch Parayko. Like he torched him. Like that was bad for a top kind of guy to watch. Like I don't know who was watching. Like the Leafs just played St. Louis twice. I don't know who was watching Parayko going, give me this guy. Like that wasn't we've seen other guys do this before in the league, have like a come get me game, like here I am, I'm good. That was the opposite of a come get me. That was like a leave me here effort from Colton Parayko twice in the span of a week against like the Leafs like B team. So
Yeah,
I don't.
I don't think that was ever like a super realistic possibility. Like a lot of people got way too deep down the rabbit
Yeah.
hole for what that was.
So you hedge it. And, so then I looked at forward over the last little bit and thought, well, maybe you bring in a forward to the point where you could put Nylander on the top line and say, like, yeah, you guys think you're sick? Then I'm going to put all three of you together. We'll see what happens. Like, to me, like, Toffoli fit that bill, right? Where you could potentially look at like a Tavares, Toffoli, Bertuzzi kind of line. And you could, move around Nylander accordingly, whether that be the third line or the top line or whatever, like however you want to number the lines. I don't really care. But like that kind of concept. And then I thought to myself, would I trade a first round pick for like 3 months of Tyler Toffoli? And you could argue, yes. I think that would be a reasonable argument to make. Like he is a legitimate gamer. Like he is
A real
actually good.
difference maker,
Yeah,
like a
he is a
proper
needle
difference
mover.
maker.
He is a needle mover, 100%. Like I love Toffoli, followed his whole career, all that fun stuff. Like great player from Toronto, very well aware of Tyler. But that again is a hefty price. I can sit there and at least understand why Tree Living would say, yeah, I don't think I'm giving up my first for that. Like this team leads the league in goals per game. Like they're not. It might have dropped now after the Boston game. I don't know, in the past week,
They
but like
might be third or something now, but
yeah,
yeah, same idea. Like,
going into the week, it's been a tough week for them, but going into the week, they're right there. All that to say, and it's not like Toffoli was going to be power play one here, and we've seen that movie with guys and how that plays out. So I get that. I get not doing it for a rental of some capacity. You could argue, little tinkering moves. Could you have traded one of those thirds to acquire Yakov Trenin as opposed to two D-men? I think there might be a reasonable argument. How needle moving that is one way or the other, I don't know. Like, if Edmonton is solid and healthy, I think you would rather have the help on defense considering the unit. Personally, I think having a second right-handed shot is important. Personally, I also, again, we like Bobby McMahon. I'm happy to have Bobby McMahon in the top nine more often than not. So I don't know. Like, what I'm ultimately comfortable with is, and what I'm actually happy with, and the Leafs probably won't do it this way, but I would do it this way, is I would, again, look at the top guys and say, like, this is on you. Like, you got to own. It's always been about you. It's going to always be about you as long as you guys are here getting paid the money that you're getting paid. It is on you. If you don't like it, play better. If you want to go further, play better. That's where we're at. That's it. There's nothing else to say. Are you tired of losing to Boston? Like, after Pastrnak, Marchand is their best forward. And I'm sorry, but like, at this point in his career, and I love Brad Marchand, he is not better than Matthews, Marner, or Nylander. He's not.
No, I mean
So,
he shouldn't. He definitely shouldn't be. If he is, then those players are not playing well.
yeah. So on any given night, the Leafs should go into that series and have three of the best forwards, three of the four best forwards in the game. And you're telling me that their one is playing, outplaying the Leafs three back to back. That is bad. That is problematic. Like, that is on them. Like, that is on them to fix. That is on them to break through. Like, I've always just kind of hoped for this year where they just say, like, fuck it. Like, we're tired of it. Like, we've had enough. Like, we're just like, nothing's stopping us. Like, we're just going through. Like, the year where Matthew just says, like, I'm done. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone does. Like, no one's stopping me because he's legitimately that good.
And this could be the year for that. I mean, this is his best regular season. I mean, I realize the last couple of games have not been like the most glowing Matthews games and all those like Matthews goal trending for whatever, but like this season so far is his best season. And this could be the year that he finds that gear. Like that's well within the range of outcomes. But people, because of this history, have really, I think there's kind of a defeatism about it, like, oh, this is inevitable, this is what always happens, and like, it's not necessarily the case. Some of the guys have also improved. Like Matthews is a better player now than he was 4 years ago. Nylander is a better player now than he was 3 years ago. Like it,
There's a syndrome of like looking at the same names all the time. It's like
and
the like
thinking they're the same player, which is not true.
yeah, like the level of like doom and gloom is like insane. Like, I continually have to like pinch myself and say, like, do you forget how bad it was for 10 years? Like 10 years, like a decade, like 10, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then it ended just to do what happened that everyone still talks about happened in 2013. And then it went back to being shit for 3 more years. That's really bad. And I'm not like, trust me, I'm not sitting here patting them on the ass for making the playoffs and losing quick in quick fashion. But at some point, I gotta believe that it hardens you a little bit. And you like, like that you learn how to dig in. Like, at some point, like, you gotta say, like, enough. And that would be the, I wouldn't say anything if I was Leafs. I would play the underdog to the highest extent possible. Like, if they're playing Boston round one, and like the first like two things from Sheldon aren't, they swept us in the regular season, these guys are massive, massive favorites against us. And then the second thing saying, like, how much murder will they get away with? on any given night, then I don't know what he's doing, and he hasn't learned a thing for 5 years. Like, he has to play the underdog card, and he has to play the Boston gets away with murder card every single night. Like, and they got to buy into that and play it. Like, you know, like, those guys should feel disrespected that they're underdogs. Matthews should be like, I'm scoring 70. And everyone's looking at me like we're first round casualty, like we're first round fodder. Like, how is he not disrespected by that? Like, could you imagine looking at Prime Sid being like, yeah, first round fodder? It's a joke, man. Like, come on. Like, he at some point.
Yeah, I mean it is this, yeah, it's this it's the conversation spirals out. It's kind of hard to believe what's even happened to this point, but it doesn't mean that that's necessarily the fate of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Their fate in this little stretch of time was to hollow out the entire middle of their drafts for the foreseeable future and get a couple of bruising defensemen. And I understand why people think that that hasn't fundamentally changed the team. I kind of agree with that. But at the same time, we don't know what the alternatives might have been. And I think, you know, everyone basically is listening to this as a Leafs fan. And I don't know why you would listen otherwise.
Crazy if you're
So
not
if
crazy.
you're not, like, what are you doing here? But I do think it's kind of important to, as we kind of wrap up here, end on a note of that, like, whether the Maple Leafs lose in the first round again or not, and it's probably more than a 50% chance that that's the case, like, you don't have to feel that now. You don't have to feel that in advance. You don't have to mourn that today because they didn't have a huge trade deadline. Like, there'll be plenty of times. You, again, if you're listening to this, you're a Leafs fan. You felt defeat. You felt lows again and again and
Yeah.
again.
You're
There's
battle
no,
scarred. You're
yeah,
vet.
you've been through it. There is no need to beat yourself up today in advance. Wait for it to happen and then go through whatever your process is. We all have a process. But
Yeah.
if today you feel like the Maple Leafs have, like, fundamentally failed and doomed themselves, that attitude will bring you no joy, whether it's accurate or not. Like, what are you going to say in a few months, in a few weeks? You'll say, oh, I was right. The Leafs lost. Okay, congrats. Here's a pat on the back. Like, that
One
was
of
always the most,
31.
yeah, one of the most likely scenario. So I guess, yeah, I just want to get that message out there that no matter how disappointed people are, just wait for something bad to happen to feel bad about it. I think it's a very basic principle for life in general. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect at it. It's very easy for me to get in front of my skis on pessimism, but I just don't think that it's very
Yeah.
helpful.
And ultimately, I would sum it up probably this week as looking as, is the penalty kill going to be better? And if it is, I think that's a good thing. I know that's not the thing that people are targeting, and I know that's not the big thing, but if the penalty kill is better, this is a better hockey team. It is. And then it ultimately will, again, it's going to come down to what it always came down to, the top guys finding another gear and hitting another level. And being those guys that they're talent-wise are capable of being, but between the ears have not been capable of being to this point. So we'll see how that part plays out. But I do think that I think the goal here was right-handed defenseman, clearly of some caliber, and help the penalty kill. I can at least see how you can trend to that direction given what they've done. That's basically the best I can say about it. I think they could have added another forward of high quality to give themselves some real options. I obviously would have swung on Tanev. Sounds like they did, and it didn't take.
Other team has to accept the other side of the deal is the at the end of the day. Yeah, no, I
Yeah.
think that's a good point. If in the next few weeks it's going to be very interesting to pay close attention to the penalty kill because that is kind of the signature improvement that they're going for, which is valid because that was arguably their signature weakness. And if they're able to be a half decent penalty killing team, suddenly instead of a bottom third team in goals against, they're more of an average team in goals against alongside an elite offense.
That is a big
Potentially, that's a pretty
difference.
good recipe.
That is a big
So,
difference.
We are going to wrap on a fairly long episode of Maple Leafs Hot Stove podcast, but you know what? It's a special occasion, so we're not going to beat ourselves up for that. We will be back with you again at some point next week. As always, we appreciate ratings, reviews, word of mouth endorsements, forcing people who aren't even Leafs fans to listen. Whatever you guys do to grow this thing on our behalf is appreciated. And we look forward to talking to you again.
Everyone is looking at me. Time is running and we're down by three. Look inside yourself, what do you see? The pain is in your mind, no, nothing stops me. Everyone is looking at me. Heart is pounding and we're down by three. Look inside yourself, I know what I see. Do you have the guts to do